Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. Colonel Terry Virts, astronaut, retired United States Air Force fighter pilot on the show. He lived on the space station for 6 months. We had him on a while back. We're reposting the podcast, so it'll be right up there as if it happened today. We went through the entire mission, so if you want to hear that, it's really compelling. We had a lot of listener questions for you the last time you were on, and we feel like a couple of them were really good. One was, what was the first thing you did when you got back to Earth?
Hey, it's good to be back with you guys.
Good morning.
First thing I did when I got back to Earth was I did a walk around of the shuttle. So we landed. It took me about an hour to power the thing down. And then there's this tradition. Pilots, after you land, you're supposed to do a walk around and just make sure the airplane's still all there and all the pieces are still there. Sometimes with United Airlines, that's not true. But so with the shuttle, we walked around and I was really dizzy. And I asked my boss, I'm like, hey, boss, just stay next to me just in case I need to, just in case I pass out and fall over. Because I didn't. I was okay, but man, I felt pretty dizzy.
How does it feel going from no gravity to lots of gravity?
Well, like I said, dizzy is kind of the main thing, and then heavy. So when I'm sitting there in the shuttle, I was the last guy out because as the pilot, I had to turn everything off, and they finally came in and said, all right, it's time to get out. And I grabbed my helmet to give to them, and I was like, be careful, man. This thing weighs 500 pounds. So after being weightless, everything feels heavy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're walking all hunched over? Your knuckles are dragging? Like you're crawling on the floor?
So
I've had those nights, actually.
Right here on Earth.
Struggles with gravity.
It's kind of...
you don't have to leave the planet to do that.
Right.
That's a good space travel simulator, yeah.
You mentioned the plane engine exploding. Just let's get your thoughts on that for a second.
Yeah. Well, first of all, when something that bad happens and the engine stays together and keeps on running and the plane was okay, you know, thank God that everybody was okay. And that's really, I think, a testimony to the Pratt & Whitney engine and the Boeing 777 for being able to handle something like that. And also the pilots for staying calm and you know, getting the jet back. So the main thing is that everybody was okay, and those pieces falling didn't hit anybody. That's a miracle.
That is nuts, right?
But, yeah, so I've had engines come apart and explode, and it's not fun. In fact, I've got a bag full of compressor blades from a T-38 after it. We hit a bird, and the thing just exploded. And normally, so what happened on that engine is it's not like what happened when I had the problem because it stayed together, so... it'll be really interesting to see if just like the outer shell just came off on its own, or maybe just one fan blade came off or something. But normally when one comes off, they all come off. So I don't know. It'll be NTSB. I don't want to speculate because the NTSB's job is to figure out what happened. But the main thing is everybody was okay. And even though it was bad, it's really a testimony to all the, like the backup plan kind of worked in this case, which is good.
How do you train for something like that? They have to train you for emergencies.
Oh, yeah. So pilots do simulators. My neighbor's a United Airlines pilot, actually. My former astronaut, he was my astronaut classmate. He lives next door to me, and now he's flying for United. So he goes out to Denver.
That must suck to have you over to barbecues. Oh, you're a pilot? Yeah. I'm an astronaut. Okay. Well, we want to talk to you.
I'll just be here quietly for the next few hours.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's the thing. He's an astronaut, too. We were astronauts together. So
now he's a pilot.
He's an airline pilot, yeah. But he goes out about once a year to do simulators. So and in the Air Force, every year you'd have to do your annual emergency trainer in the sim, where they fail engines and they give you fuel leaks and they fail the hydraulic systems. And so you have to run through all that. But I'll tell you, I've done millions of simulations and I've had a few real emergencies, and when the real ones happen, your heart rate is a lot higher than when they happen in the sim, that's for sure. So I'm sure these guys were they sounded great on the radio. The most important thing for pilots is to sound cool on the radio, so the United guys sounded sounded good on the radio.
Right, because you get harassed after that, right, by your fellow pilots?
If you're screaming like a little girl or something, that's not good. That's not cool.
Astronaut Colonel Terry Virts is on. And another tribe question. I'd like to hear his opinion about the astronaut who skipped a mission to go to his daughter's wedding. That's from Shane.
You know, that's an interesting question. So there's this this conflict between your career and your family. I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm writing a screenplay with that very theme right now. That's not only for astronauts, but that's for any career. And so there's this conflict of, do you you have your duty to do, you got to do what you sign up to train to do. And then you also have family that, you know, is often left behind and is often in second place. So that's a conflict that, you know, a lot of folks feel. Most of the time the mission wins out, but sometimes there's just things that you just can't, that you're not going to miss on Earth. And so, yeah, that's something that we all go through. And I'm actually writing something with that exact theme right now.
What was the reaction of other astronauts?
I think most probably went, oh, that's good. That's really nice. And what they're really thinking is, that's one more mission for me to fly.
Interesting.
So, but I mean, you know, guys understand.
I think he made the right call. It's his daughter's wedding.
I went nuts on the guy.
Yeah.
I went nuts on the guy.
I think we ran that as best of multiple times.
Yeah.
I went absolutely nuts on the guy. And I think it was just...
Why can't she move the date? That's my question.
Well, move the date or, you know, I'm going to beam in from space, which is another moment.
Awesome. No other wedding will have that.
But I've trained for this. The whole crew is trained for this. We've all trained for this. We're all set to go. The dates are in place. How does this... Oh, you know what? I'm going to go somewhere else. That would be like if you do morning radio and it's snowing out and you say, I don't want to come in. It's snowing out. No, we're the people who come in to tell everyone to stay home, right?
Like the mailman, right? Not
That's
rain,
right.
Nor sleet, nor snow. Yeah.
That's right. Now, mailmen have more bragging rights over this astronaut.
Right. I mean, every situation is different, but what if it's not a wedding? What if it's, you know, your own child being born? Or what if it's, what if you're... spouse has cancer, you know, and you don't want to orphan your kids or whatever. There's a lot of different stories, you know, that you can go down that.
That's
why you pick family or duty.
That's why I'm glad you weren't on the phone or listening when I was having that rant.
I can pull it up if you want me
to. No, I'm good. Keith at work.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, certainly it's humbling to speak to you, Colonel. Good morning, sir. So I understand the astronaut corps, you have to be a certain level of fitness and a certain kind of a physical specimen, if you will. So as space gets privatized, do you think those requirements will be eased up? And what are the ramifications of, if you're not such a physical specimen health-wise and such to go through a launch and a landing?
That's a great question, because there's definitely some minimums that you need just to be able to survive launch and landing, because it doesn't matter how wealthy you are, you know, you got to launch and you got to land. So they want to make sure your heart's going to work and, you know, you're not going to have some really bad condition that happens once you get into orbit. Now, a lot of the space tourism is just on very short, like 5-minute suborbital flights. So you go up, you float around for 5 minutes, and then you immediately come back down. So as long as you don't have a heart attack, you're probably good to go. But if you're going to go up on a longer mission, I think SpaceX is selling some orbital missions for $50 million each. You do have to have some basic, you know, assurance that you're not, that you don't have some chronic conditions or whatever. So they're going to have the minimums, but you know, if they're not going to be doing spacewalks, if they're not going to be there for 6 months, I don't think it'll be as critical. And frankly, if they're paying $50 million, the docs are probably going to be a little bit more lenient, for those guys. Yeah.
Lastly, real quickly, I understand when you first get into orbit, I've read reports that you it's the sensation of being hungover, stomach sick, and some some nausea. Is that correct?
I think the coming back to Earth was more like the hangover, but my first 2 days in space sucked. I had a really bad headache, actually, and I couldn't rotate my head. Like, when I was moving around, I'd have to rotate my head really slowly because you have this, it's called a neurovestibular system in your inner ear, and it's mm-hmm. three canals that are orthogonal to each other. So it's just like flying F-16s and flying the space shuttle. We had these rate gyro sensors that told the computer if you were pitching up or yawing left or right. Our bodies have the same design, basically. And that thing gets tricked. It's like, what the heck is happening? There's no more gravity, and it doesn't know if it's rotating or not. And that confusing signal going into your brain makes it very unhappy for about a day or two. And everybody kind of feels some level of – not most people don't throw up, but everybody's got a headache or doesn't feel great on their first mission. When I went back on my second mission, my body remembered – and it was fine immediately. So,
you know, just listening to you speak, not that I thought I had any chances before that, but listening to your answer, I realized how smart you have to be. I'm like, wow, I wouldn't be able to do that.
I'm not it. Yeah, no, I'll be over here.
You have to know a lot more than just get in the seat, push this button.
Well, for me, people say, how long is astronaut training? And, you know, you're an ASCAN when you get there because they want to make you feel good about yourself. It's astronaut candidate. And that's about a year and a half. But the reality is it's a lifetime. I mean, the stuff you learn in school while you're at work, you're reading magazines about space and just keep getting smart about life and learning geography and learning foreign languages. And there's so many things that you really need to spend a lifetime. You just need to be like a curious kind of person that likes to learn stuff.
Did you watch Apollo 13? Did I ask you this already? And what did you think of that? I mean, I'm sure you studied it, right?
Yeah. Well, the actual accident. Yeah. The movie is one of the best space movies of all time. And you know, the thing, well, it's amazing because it's true. They didn't make any of that stuff up. The characters were real. I mean, that really happened. That was the easiest job for the screenplay writer because they just had to write what happened, right? But the other thing about that movie that I love is that it was filmed on the Vomit Comet, this airplane that it's a big airliner. The pilot pushes over and you get about 20 seconds of weightlessness. So they filmed that movie with real actors on a really in weightlessness.
Wow.
It's not CG. And so visually it just looks so much better than the modern animated movies that are not real. I love that movie. It's a great film.
Someday let's sit down and watch it together.
Yeah. It's definitely on the Mount Rushmore of best ever space.
It really is. I'm going to hold you to that. I'm going to go to your, we found out that Terry lives on a street with two other astronauts. So there's three of them. So you're going to have a party, and you're going to have the, and I'm going to sit down with you guys, and we're going to watch Apollo 13.
Every 10 minutes, you're going to pause the movie and be like, all right, well, we've all been through that.
They'll be like, Chaz, calm down, stop talking. Gary in Wallingford.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Just wondering, up in space, you know, with Wi-Fi and cell phone, you got, like, the best connection because the satellite's, like, right next to you, like, no lag when you're playing video games.
That's a great question because it's actually, you'd think that would be true, but it's the opposite. There is this limited Wi-Fi, but it's kind of like dial-up. It's not available all the time because we're flying so fast. Like one satellite shows up and then it's on the nose of the space station. And then as we go around the Earth, it goes behind the tail of the station 30 minutes later. So there is internet. It drops offline about every 30 minutes when there's not bigger gaps and it's really slow.
Does it make that funny dial-up sound?
When you exactly. For me, it was nice. It was like my chance to detox and not have a phone and not have internet and just some of my crewmates really liked to get on and whenever they could, and like I only logged on a couple times in a 200-day mission because I just wanted to be rid of it. It was kind of nice.
That's great, because when's the next time you're going to be in space? There'll be plenty of time to be on the phone.
Exactly.
His book, How to Astronaut Up. Oh, that's amazing. This movie, right? It's got to be a movie.
Absolutely.
Is your life going to be a movie?
I'm working on it. I got a few film projects I'm trying to get done. So, that's kind of my new career.
We have questions coming in. When can you ask an astronaut a question directly? 1-877-764-2535. Let's get to this announcement.
So I think we're referring to my new podcast I've got coming
out. Yes. Unless you have something else you want to announce. You're going back into space. You're going to Mars.
Life on Mars. Yeah, no, nothing like that. So I'm super excited about it. I've been doing podcasts just constantly for several years now. And a producer on one of them afterwards, he's like, dude, you need to do your own podcast. This is great. So the last couple months I've spent setting up a little studio in my house and getting some guests. And so I've recorded two episodes. I'm recording my third one after I hang up with you guys. And so it's probably going to drop in a couple weeks. It's called Down to Earth with Terry Virts. And it's about what matters here on planet Earth. So it'll be, we'll talk about space, we'll talk about science, we'll talk about politics, we'll talk about sports, film and TV. I got a lot of friends in that business. So kind of a variety of stuff. But the first two were great. We went about an hour and a half.
What'd you talk about?
So the first one was a friend of mine who runs an organization called the Climate Underground. And he's trying to, well, they're doing amazing things, improving soil and land management to bring carbon out of the atmosphere. So we talked a lot about the climate and how you can, and not just like make it painful and stop using as much gas, but actually bring carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. So it was really cool. He was in the movie. I directed a movie called One More Orbit last year, and he was a part of that film. So he was my first guy. Yesterday, I talked to a guy named Eric Berger, who's a space reporter for Ars Technica. Eric Berger, yeah. And so we talked about all things space. He has a new book coming out about SpaceX. So he got to interview Elon for hours and hours and hours. And
what do you think of Elon?
Elon's a pretty – he's an amazing guy. He definitely gets shit done.
Yeah.
So he between SpaceX and Tesla, and he's also got the Boring Company, but he's definitely a good
another he's our Einstein, isn't he?
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
I think in history he'll go down as a figure like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
He basically completely changed the landscape of the space launch industry. He really took out the American big rocket companies, and he's destroyed the Russian launch industry. Like they have been decimated by SpaceX, and China is really China's going after Elon, not necessarily other people. So
right.
From launch, he's had a massive impact. And from Tesla, he's really he's changed the landscape of the car industry. And like General Motors just announced they're not making gas cars, I think after 2035, something like that. So he's definitely had some impact, love him or hate him. He probably should stop smoking weed on his interviews on TV.
Endeared him to folks, right? A younger group
does,
of people.
Yeah. Right. It's just the astronauts that have to launch on his capsules are probably like, ugh.
Good point. There is that. Yeah. I didn't think about that. Right.
There's pluses and minuses.
Right.
He did an update for all the cars where it had all the fart sounds. Yeah. Anything to get attention.
So you want to buy the stock right after something like that happens.
Yeah, because it goes down a little.
Jeff in Monroe, what's your question?
Hey, guys, I got actually two quick questions. The Dookie, where does it go? Is it just in the diaper for that whole flight?
Good question.
So the diapers, the very first American astronaut, there's a funny scene in the Right Stuff movie. Alan Shepard, he's sitting there, and he was only supposed to be a 15-minute flight, so they didn't think about it. And then they had several hours of delays. So he's sitting there on the launch pad, and he had to just go in his suit. So after that, we said, maybe we ought to have diapers. And so that you pretty much only use those for number one. There's a chapter. My new book is called How to Astronaut, and it's 51 essays about random things about spaceflight. And one of them is the diaper. So you only want to use number one. You don't ever want to go number two in there because you're sealed in a zipped up, pressure tight suit.
You plan your meals accordingly.
The night before.
Nah, you got to plan your meals accordingly.
Yeah.
You plan your meals and you plan your visits accordingly because that's something. And you also have it for spacewalks because you're in that big spacesuit for 8 or 9 hours. So you just have to plan. You have to get regular, get on a schedule and make sure make sure that's not an issue.
Have you ever seen?
You could do it. But.
Have you ever seen duty floating through space?
Yeah. Where does it go? How do you do number two?
You release, you know, whatever from the space station. Have you ever seen like a duty
floating
by,
knocking on the window?
The number twos go in a can, and they go in a cargo ship that deorbits, comes back to Earth, and burns up in the atmosphere. So if you ever look up and see one of these NASA cargo ships come burning up in the atmosphere, you know what it is that's burning up.
Literally flaming poo.
Exactly. But in the number one gets recycled. There's a big, fancy recycling system. So
and you drink it.
It recycles your – yeah, oh, absolutely.
Mike in the car.
Yes. Good morning, Colonel. During the administration you served during, was there a big difference in their respect to interest and how far the program would go? And thank you for your service.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Sure. That's a great question. It's actually one of the chapters in my How to Astronaut book is about how politics work. So each president is different. Some are really into space and others are less so. None of them really are space experts. You know, they usually come from political backgrounds or whatever. I know Obama was a big space fan, but, you know, that wasn't his background at all. So they really depend on the people they put in charge of NASA. The problem that we've had in America for years now is that when the one guy gets in office, he doesn't like the last guy. So he cancels everything the last guy did. Then the new guy doesn't like the other guy before him and they cancel. And that, you know, that's not a good way to run any program, but especially not space. And we're hopeful that this time that the guy that Trump put in charge of NASA was a guy named Jim Bridenstine. And he was really nonpartisan. He did a good job of not being Trump's guy. He was just a space guy. And so we're hopeful that the Biden administration is going to not undo everything that he did. So this may be actually, believe it or not, everything else about our political system is a complete disaster. But space, thankfully, might have some promise that there's a little bit of continuity.
What did you think of Space Force?
You know, I had written an op-ed in the Washington Post, and I was at the White House speaking at the National Space Council. I was 10 feet in front of Trump the day he announced that there was going to be a Space Force. I was the person directly in front of him. I'm a fan. I think that we've had a Space Force since the 60s. It was just divided up between the Air Force, Army, and Navy. And it makes sense to me to put space people in a space organization because having been a pilot and also having been a space person, they're completely different. The kind of people, the equipment, everything is completely unrelated. So it's why we have an Army and a Navy, because the ground is different than the ocean. So I think it makes sense. I think we also need a cyber force, by the way. I think that's really important.
Oh, boy. Yeah, right. That makes sense.
Not to add bureaucracy. Hopefully we can, I doubt if it would happen, but I think the goal should be to try and make it more efficient and have less redundancy and try and save some money. Cause we really need to save, we're spending way too much money on the military. We need to figure out how to save money with these huge, huge deficits that we have.
Let's talk to you about the Mars rover. What do you think of that? Yes. Were you there when they started dreaming this up?
Well, I have been out to JPL, you know, several times over the last 20 years. Some friends of mine, one of my good friends is one of the lead scientists on this rover, and he was on Spirit and Opportunity, too. So I've been a fan. I've never worked there, but I've kind of worked with some of the people that are in charge. JPL is a jet propulsion laboratory out in California, and they run all of these robotic probes that go out. And those guys are just amazing. The video yesterday, I don't know if you've seen it, but if you haven't, Google it. They got the first ever camera during the actual landing. So you can see Mars in the distance and the parachute comes out and the heat shield comes off. And then the retro rockets fire and they lower the rover with this crane, like on a tether. And it's just the coolest thing. It's amazing. It's really,
insanity,
really
isn't
good
it?
Video.
Isn't it insanity when you think about how far away that is and how every single thing had to go right?
Fully automated.
And, you know, you're really practicing all of this. It's insane.
It's insane. And I didn't know this until I was doing my podcast yesterday with Eric. And he mentioned that during the descent, just a couple minutes before landing, there's this camera system that looks at the crater where they're landing and it does like pattern matching. And then I thought it was just a parachute falling straight down, but those rockets actually move it to the left, you know, to go to the exact landing spot. So I did not know that. It's amazing. And it's 11 minutes away, right? It takes light 11 minutes to get to Mars in the where it is right now in our orbits. And so it's all automated. There's no if you wait 11 minutes to set, you know, go left a little bit, it's already crashed by that point. So it's got to be automatic.
Hit the brakes.
Too late. Yeah.
And now.
Exactly.
What are you hoping that they find there? So it's really a 2-point mission, right? One, they landed it near this old lake bed. They want to see if they can dig up some signs of life. And then the other is they want to try to turn the air there into oxygen, right?
Yeah, that's amazing. I think the big one is life. And the lake that they landed in, they think used to be a lake. It's now a crater drier than the Sahara Desert. But, you know, a couple billion years ago, there was standing water. So the thought is, you know, if there's water and reasonably warm temperatures, maybe life somehow developed. So we'll see if they find it. I kind of don't think they will, but they might. There's, you know, I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. But going to Mars, even if you don't find Mars, there's still valid reasons to go there. It's a pretty cool place. And they've got this helicopter that's going to be pretty awesome. It'll be the first ever helicopter or any airplane really on another planet. So hopefully it works. It's kind of it's not like the main science of the mission. It's a fun thing to have, but if it works, it's going to be very cool.
It's mind-boggling to think about the first manned mission in space. And now we have this thing that successfully landed on Mars and sent pictures and sound back all in my lifetime.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It used to be for our grandparents, it was like we went from the Wright brothers to the moon in you know, 60 some years. But now in our lifetimes, we went from the moon to all this amazing robotic exploration. I think the robotic stuff that NASA does is very cool and very amazing. And there's three satellites in orbit around Mars now. One of them is from the UAE, which is the first ever Arab mission to Mars, which is really cool. I've got some friends in the UAE, and that's a really good thing for the Arab world to have, you know, launched a mission to Mars, which is pretty amazing. And that's a good thing from them. And China also has a mission there too. So three different nations are at Mars right now, which is very cool.
How long do you think before we have a man or a woman set foot on Mars?
You know, we've been 20 years from Mars ever since we landed on the moon. When we landed on the moon, Wernher von Braun, who was our German, who made the Saturn V rocket, he had a plan to get to Mars by 89. And then in 1989, George H.W. Bush said that we're going to go to Mars. And then NASA came up with this massive price tag and they canceled it. And then in 2009, Obama came into office and said, we're on a journey to Mars. And then we're not really any closer. We were probably closer in 1969 because we still had the Saturn V rocket, which is, you know, you need a big rocket to get there. So it's going to come down to, you got to have the political will that's bipartisan and international. You know, you put a team together and then you have to stick to it over the course of a decade. So it can happen. But like I told Vice President Pence at the National Security Council, it's not about the rocket science. It's about the political science.
If you were younger and not retired and they were ready to do this, would you go?
You know, my favorite part of Kennedy's speech was we'll land a man on the moon before the end of the decade and return him safely to the Earth. So as long as that return him safely to the Earth was part of the plan, then yes, I would.
Smart.
I want a round trip ticket, not a
smart
one-way
decision.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah, because that mission might be one way, right?
There's definitely thought of that for sure. There's yes, Elon has said he wants to buy a one-way ticket to Mars. So, I mean, and there's that's okay. That's just not me.
Yeah,
there's stuff on Earth that is pretty nice.
You got your neighborhood, you got your friends, your picnics, got your podcast to think about now.
I got a podcast. I got a lake here. There's some ducks out on the lake.
Yeah,
sounds wonderful.
You've earned
snowing here.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, are you in Texas?
I am in Houston, Texas, where it was like I was in Philadelphia last week.
Nuts. Wow.
It was in the teens a couple days in a row. It was insane. I've never seen anything like this in Houston. It was crazy. Snowing, ice. Yeah. The whole
thing. Well, 2020.
And Texas is big, right? County in Texas was under a winter storm warning. So it was insane. It's still 2020.
I think 2020 hasn't ended yet. Yeah.
No, we're on. It's like December 69th or something, you know.
How do we get rid of it?
In 2020. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for letting me not let you go for a long time. And we're linked up to all things astronaut Colonel Terry Virts, the book How to Astronaut Up, and the podcast. We're all linked up, WPLR.com, 95.9thefox.com. Thanks, Terry.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.